powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Monday. It is Jake and Stacy. Jake is on vacation instead. In his place, we've got Curtis Rogers. I think a dynamic duo right now. What up, Curtis?
I think so. I think Jake better be worrying about, you know, maybe his key card not working tomorrow.
I kind of assumed, to be honest, that you were going to replace Jake.
I mean, it seems pretty obvious at this point, right?
Yeah, he's going to come back.
Who?
Exactly, Jake. I think it's Hayes?
I can't remember either.
There was a Mariners series this weekend against the Houston Astros.
You're darn right there was.
There absolutely was, and it was a phenomenal one indeed. Mariners take 2 of 3 in a weekend series against Houston. They took that finale against the Astros thanks to a 4-run fifth inning. Let's revisit that, by the way. You got Trammell singles, Crawford's walk, 2 on base. Haniger comes up and gets a 2-run triple.
Here's the pitch on the way to Haniger, swinging a fly ball into center field. Backing up, Straw to the warning track, still going back, reaches out, and it's off his glove! Ronnie third, heading home, down the stretch he comes, Trammell, right behind him, Ronnie third, heading home, J.P. Crawford, the throw in is cut off, Haniger around to third base with a 2-run triple. Straight away, center field, that ball kept going and going and going, and the Mariners have the lead. 3-2 over the Astros here in the bottom of the fifth.
Mitch Haniger ends up getting 5 hits, 3 runs, 4 RBI in that entire series, by the way. Next man up is Ty France. He's had a pretty good series, too, himself having 5 hits, 3 runs. One of those comes right here with a home run to drive in Haniger and, of course, himself.
Hang on, I have the wrong highlight here, guys. Hang on,
oh,
sorry,
wow,
I have the double.
Wow.
Well, that's because there was
so many highlights
from Ty France.
Anyway, all right.
Here we go.
The 0-1 pitch to France. Swing and a fly ball deep to left field. McCormick going back to the warning track, to the wall, running out of room. Goodbye, baseball! Into the Astros bullpen. Ty France with his 3rd home run of the season. The Mariners have now scored 4 here in the bottom of the 5th and now lead the Astros 5-2.
378 feet on that one. Just kind of barely clears the left field wall. Doesn't matter because it still clears it. You have 2 more runs that drive in. They take the lead and they don't give it up. End up finishing that series 7-2 in that series finale to take 2 of 3 against Houston. And it got me thinking, Curtis.
What's that? What were you thinking about?
Well,
there was a
lot to take from this series. But one of the names, and this will surprise no one because if you guys are listening, it's one of the names you were thinking about too, if not the top name, Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger has had a phenomenal start to the season, has been consistently their best performer. Not only that, though, I think that as much as this team loves Mitch Haniger, he's thrown a bit of a wrench in their rebuild plans.
And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No,
because
not at all.
If you're the Mariners and you are trying to make yourself a competitive ball club night in and night out, and for the most part this season we have seen that. They're 10-6. They have the 2nd most wins in baseball right now behind the team that they're about to face tonight, the Los Angeles Dodgers. If you're trying to make yourself a championship contender, sound logic and reasoning would tell you fill out your roster with the most talented guys that you can find. Mitch Haniger is definitely one of those guys right now. And if you are if you're a team that wants to take that next leap, I don't know why you would want to do it without talented guys. And it's more of a sure thing that Haniger is going to play to this level than anybody in your farm system is. And we talked about this a little bit, especially the team that the Mariners just faced, the Astros, for as good as they were in their heyday. And I still think there is a little bit left of that run still left in them. For as many guys as hit, like Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, they had that many guys flame out from their farm system, top prospects like Mark Appel and Brady Aiken and all these guys, Jonathan Singleton. There were plenty of names that had as much fanfare or even more so than these guys that didn't make it. So to have a sure thing in Mitch Haniger, I think that is something that the Mariners should try and hold on to for as long as possible.
I think like many people, I assumed that there was always going to be a possibility that Mitch, like James Paxton, would be a veteran that the Mariners would have as a trade piece at the trade deadline. That if he performed well enough, they'd be able to flip him and get in some better pitching or whatever else they needed. And like you pointed out when you were talking about those prospects, I mean, they have a pretty crowded outfield right now. But you also have to assume that all of those guys work out. We've heard nothing but good things about Jared Kelnick, Kyle Lewis coming off a unanimous AL Rookie of the Year selection. So you have great pieces out there. We've also only heard good things about Julio Rodriguez, also an outfielder. The chances of every single piece of your rebuild working out, and this isn't to pan the Mariners, is exceptionally rare. Like you mentioned with Houston, they ended up getting several stars, and even then they missed on other picks. It just happens. It would be an unreal feat of drafting and trading for every single piece to work out. So why not stick with Haniger? I think that what I would like to see is for the Mariners to instead keep Haniger. Say that he keeps performing at this level. Keep Haniger and just buy pitching. Like, I know it's so much more difficult than that, and I know that I'm simplifying it. But what I'd like to see is the club decide to keep something good and then spend rather than trade away something, like only having one of a good thing.
Well, and this is something that we've seen a lot in the NFL, where if you've got a quarterback and other players on their rookie deal that are outperforming what you're paying them, it allows for you to spend in other ways. The Chicago Cubs, when they won the World Series in 2016, had so many guys on their rookie deal, Javi Baez, Chris Bryant, you know, two pillars of that franchise. It allowed for them to spend wildly in free agency and get guys like John Lester and Ben Zobrist and Jason Hayward that were huge parts of that championship ball club. Same goes for the Astros as well with Justin Verlander. And you go out and trade for Garrett Cole and you're able to fill out your roster with so many of these veteran talents. I mean, the Mariners are going to have a ton of money to spend here if they choose to do so over the next couple of off seasons. And this off season, there is a lot of talent available. As we've talked about plenty of times over the last couple of months, you know, there are going to be bigger and bigger names that hit free agency, and the Mariners are going to have a very real shot at adding through that, and those are going to be proven commodities. And as we know in free agency, at the end of those contracts, it's never usually as good as it was when you first signed the guy.
Yeah.
But when you sign somebody, you're not really thinking about 7-8 years down the road, even though you do sign him to that long of a deal. That's future Jerry DePoto and Scott Service's problem. But right now, you want to fill this roster out with as much talent. And I mean, hey, they're going to get more talent here over the next, hopefully, you know, later on tonight or maybe tomorrow in Kyle Lewis, which will sort of fortify things within that lineup.
Well, and isn't that part of the plan, too? Like, you have Noel V. Marte, George Kirby, who's not as far out, but you have guys that you're thinking for 2023, 22-23 and beyond. Julio, I would put in that 22, maybe 23, but 2022 ETA date as well. We fans have been told contention starts as early as this year. I don't think anyone's expecting that to happen for the Mariners, even with some weakened teams in the AL and even with some weakened teams in your own division. I don't think people are expecting that. I'm not expecting that. I am expecting improvement from people. But in 2023 or 2022, I'm having very different expectations because the expectation is you move forward and you progress. So why not think short term with some of these guys? Mitch Haniger being one of them. He's under contract through 2022. I mean, what would you do, Curtis? Do you sign him to keep him around? Do you just kind of like let him play out and see how 2022 works? And this is all with the assumption that Haniger keeps at this pace.
Yeah.
Right? This is all with the underlying assumption that happens, which you are not guaranteed.
And as we know, injuries are a big part of the profile of what he is. This is somebody that has only been able to stay healthy through one entire season here in Seattle, and that was in 2018 when he was an All-Star. So we know what he is like when he can stay healthy and he puts it all together. And we're seeing glimpses of that right now, him being just an incredible bat atop the lineup. What is it, 338 or something he's hitting right now?
For the season, in the series, he had something absurd. Or for his last seven, he's 429, 448, 786 with a 988 OPS.
I'll take that.
Yeah,
I'll
that
take
sounds
that every,
pretty decent.
I'll gladly take that, especially looking at the rest of the lineup beyond you know, the third spot where Kyle Seager's hitting. There's a whole lot of nothing right now that's outside of those guys atop your lineup. And luckily, those are the guys who are getting the most at-bats per game for your team. But when I look at what the Mariners should do with Mitch Haniger, he's under contract through 2022. I don't see a problem with him playing it out. And then, you know, next year, if he is still hitting this way, maybe you do sign him to a 1 or 2 year extension. He's in that sort of gray area where he's going to be about, what, 32, 33 mm-hmm. when that deal, when his, you know, current contract expires. So you don't want to usually give a guy like that more than a couple of years at a time, because that historically has been sort of the downslope of a lot of players' careers when they hit that age. You and I cannot say the same. We're still going up, right?
A thousand percent. Yeah. I mean, not according to you. I mean, but now you're singing a new tune now that you've turned 30.
A little bit.
Turned 30, you're like, 30s are the new 20. I mean, a year ago, you were telling me I was a dinosaur. But I digress.
Still kind of are. Still kind of
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I mean, there are younger dinosaurs compared, like the Stegosaurus and the T-Rex.
DJ,
They did not coexist together. There was millions of years apart between those
two.
Just like there is between you and I. Okay. But, Mitch Haniger.
It's only Monday.
I don't think this is somebody who the hopes of the organization have been pinned to.
Yeah, no.
Much like Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez are.
We weren't talking about him in spring training.
We were not. We definitely were not. But I think any sort of production he gives you is the cherry on top of this sundae. And it has been much more production than any of us had anticipated.
Yes.
And I think he's kind of the offense's version of James Paxton, where Paxton was brought into the rotation. It was like, anything he can give us is something. Unfortunately, that didn't work out because his injury concerns, you know, turned out to be very true with him getting Tommy John surgery last week. So anything that Haniger gives you is such a huge thing for this team that, who knows, maybe in 2022 when Kelnick is hopefully up by then, I would imagine he's going to be up anytime in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully Julio Rodriguez is up too.
Yeah.
If those guys play up to what they're being pegged as, maybe there is an opportunity for Haniger to, you know, bring back some value that the Mariners may have been hoping for. I don't necessarily think trading him right now is the best move for this team, especially if they do keep on winning.
And I will say, I certainly was not talking about Haniger in spring training. After the Kevin Mather video, I, like everyone else, was talking about Jared Kelnick. I was talking about Julio. I was talking with the repercussions of that and what it might mean for club culture, whether there would be any resentment, service time manipulation, etc. I will say, assistant GM Justin Hollander on opening day joined us. And when we said, what are you most excited to see? He said Mitch Haniger. And it wasn't just because he was excited to see Mitch bounce back. I think he truly believed, like, this is going to be a good year for him. He's looked fantastic. So, shouts to Justin Hollander. DJ, you were saying the Mariners have found themselves in a similar crossroads before.
Yeah, and I kind of think it's the same situation as what ended up happening with another star outfielder that they had, Adam Jones, is they had this decision, well, we're rebuilding, but we have this awesome outfielder, five-tool guy. Well, let's trade him for future prospects. That ended up being a horrible decision. It wasn't even for future prospects, actually. It was for, like,
Eric Bedard,
who... Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
But, we don't need to go down that.
But I see this, especially after the whole Kevin Mather situation, the Mariners want to change the perception that has hung over them for years and years, which is everyone makes the joke. They see, like, Jared Kelnick, they see Julio Rodriguez. Oh, those guys are going to be a great Yankees players in 5 years. So to change the perception of what Bill Bavese did and Jack Zarenzik did, you got to keep the star. I think you have to keep him. I think it's an easy choice right now is you keep him.
And he could very well be a part of their plans. This is from the perspective of fans who, I'm including myself in there, people that were talking about the pieces they're excited about and kind of overlooking Seager, overlooking Haniger because you want the shiny new toy. So who knows if Jerry DePoto and Service both very much had Haniger as a part of their plans, right? Like, that's also a key possibility. We'll be getting back to this conversation right now, though. It is 11:15, and that means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
So, some unfortunate breaking news from this morning. New Seahawks defensive end Alden Smith is wanted in St. Bernard Parish in New Orleans for second-degree battery that allegedly occurred on Saturday at a coffee house. According to reports, there's also video of the incident. Now, moving past the big picture part, let's move this to the football perspective. Does the Seahawks pass rush take a hit if he's unable to play for them in 2021?
Not even a little bit. This pass rush does not take a hit if Alden Smith is not on this team. This is a luxury signing This is something that is, you know, not needed. This is a Paramount Plus subscription to
First of all, I have very much found that useful in my binging of Survivor, so watch yourself.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Survivor, by the
way. Exactly.
Season 41 coming up.
What's up, Jeff Probst?
Later this year. But no, this pass rush does not take a hit if Alden Smith is not on the roster. It would have been great if he could. You know, we still don't know what the Seahawks are going to do in this situation. They have to let the legal process play out. But if he is not a member of the Seahawks, this does not derail them from anything that they had planned in 2021.
I wasn't convinced that Alden Smith was automatically a lock for the roster. When we were talking about the odd man out, I think all of us were like, yeah, you could look at a guy like Rasheem Green, who's been kind of a jack of all trades, master of none. He hasn't been your premier edge rusher or your premier interior guy. He's just kind of been someone else there. And I know that he led the team in sacks when they were awful that year, but it was also with four. Alden Smith had five last year. That said, there was always a chance that Alden Smith just didn't look like who they thought he would be in camp. Like, just because he had been someone whose ceiling was exceptionally high, and whose ceiling could still be exceptionally high. Don't forget, he doesn't have 5 years of wear and tear since he was out of the league. But it was not a guaranteed thing. I do think it would have been, and we don't know how this is going to pan out. He could still be a part of the team. He is only wanted. He hasn't been arrested. Anything like that. So this is all stuff that is still playing out. I think that even if he were to be part of the team, he can still be a great help and a great part of a rotation. He is not someone I was going to have predicting to lead the team in sacks. I was still going to have that be a guy like Carlos Dunlap. Maybe it's Dunlap and whatever Daryl Taylor or Alton Robinson look like. I mean, man, I feel like he had five sacks last year, but kind of fell off. I think everyone was really excited about Alden Smith, and I don't think this is a huge loss. That's a very too long, didn't read summary of what I was saying.
Number two.
I'll leave you hanging there, Stacey.
Thanks.
So former 49ers wide receiver Marquise Goodwin ended up signing with the Chicago Bears this weekend, and Jeremy Fowler reported that the Seahawks were interested in the slot receiver, but they remain high on Freddie Swain to be their wide receiver 3. Are you guys confident in Freddie Swain, or do the Seahawks need to still be looking for a vet for that spot?
I think I would feel more comfortable with a veteran receiver coming in.
I assumed Philip Dorsett would stay.
Yeah, but boy, I mean, the opportunity to get passes thrown to you from Trevor Lawrence, that doesn't seem too bad.
Yeah.
Also, he gets to play with his offensive coordinator from a year ago, Brian Schottenheimer, who's down in Jacksonville. Also, Darrell Bevell down in Jacksonville. It's Seattle Southwest down in Jacksonville. But I would be much more confident if the Seahawks went out and got a veteran for that wide receiver 3 spot. I'm not too sure they're going to look at drafting a receiver in, you know, the next couple of weeks, although we will be profiling another one today. That'd be Minnesota receiver Rashad Bateman. But for me, I just think a veteran would be a much bigger get at that wide receiver 3 spot.
Yeah, I'd like to see some additional depth there. It's not because you didn't see a lot of potential with Freddie Swain, and it's not because Freddie Swain can't be the type of third receiver they want, right? Like, they want a Paul Richardson, I would imagine, kind of guy, a guy that can be a depth threat. He's going to get like 400 something yards, maybe 500 yards. He's not going to be Metcalf. He's not going to be Lockett. But if you take away more, which you do this year because he walked in free agency, you have a big gap between your next guys. People know to look out for Metcalf and Lockett this year. You need to have an emergency option. I would feel comfortable with a veteran. I will add, though, to hedge my bets, I do think it's possible that a guy like Gerald Everett or maybe Colby Parkinson come out and kind of be that guy.
Number three.
Alex Smith has announced his retirement from the NFL this morning. What kind of legacy does the quarterback leave with?
I was thinking about this on my drive-in because I saw the news on SportsCenter. 16 years in the league, that is a long time to be playing in the NFL. But I think his greatest legacy is one where the team that he immediately leaves becomes a Super Bowl contender. In San Francisco, he was the bridge to Colin Kaepernick, and that organization took off like a rocket after Alex Smith left. In Kansas City, he was the bridge to Patrick Mahomes. Same exact thing.
Yeah.
Washington is building something
nice. He's good
luck,
Chuck.
Yeah. Washington's building something nice right now. Their defense is really good. They don't have a quarterback right now, but what if they do find one? I think Alex Smith, the ultimate bridge quarterback.
That's a good point. There will always be the controversy, too, of him getting concussed in San Francisco and then losing his job as a result of injury. But also Kaepernick was always going to beat him out. I think that's the perception. I think that before his injury, I think he would have been seen as a guy that just didn't meet expectations. It is so, so hard to meet them when you are a high pick, right? Like, it is hard to meet the expectations that he was dealt. I think that his recovery from a horrible, horrific injury added a lot to his legacy. And I think that will always be intertwined with what he did. I think that his story is forever going to be a story about kind of overcoming the odds physically with injury or making a comeback, as opposed to didn't meet expectations. Like, I think that's been altered forever.
Text line's pointing out that I said Seattle Southwest.
Yeah.
In relation to Jacksonville.
Bear down.
If you keep going west,
yes.
You circumnavigate the globe and eventually get to Jacksonville. That's what I meant.
What I thought you were saying.
Yeah.
Did people not get that?
Exactly.
Weird.
It's a Monday for everyone, apparently.
Don't they know how to read compasses?
So Mike Salk will be joining us. We've been having awesome guests fill in. We had Shannon fill in. We had the Groz fill in. Mike Salk finally back. And from a horrific recovery. Speaking of comebacks, Curtis, Mike Salk
making
it back. I think we almost lost him. Maybe. I don't know.
He'll say that.
I believe it. I absolutely believe it. We'll have Mike Salk back. I can't wait to talk to him about what this team is doing with Mitch Haniger, top of the lineup, how exciting that is, where he wants to see improvements, and what he thinks this game, this series against the Dodgers can be for a measuring stick for Seattle. That's all coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Mike Salk is in, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, we almost lost you.
I missed you guys.
Did you? Yes. Or are you just saying that to be polite?
No, of course I missed
you. Were
I
our faces the ones you were thinking of when you were dying?
When you saw the bright light?
In the hospital
Yeah,
room.
When you saw the light at the end of the tunnel?
Stay away. Stay far away from kidney stones. They are the devil's handiwork, is all I can say.
But then you got to take a nice little vacation after to recover.
I did, but I'm taking, have you ever heard of Flomax?
Yeah.
I'm now taking Flomax like an old man. So I have a couple more days on Flomax. Let me just tell you, there's a good reason it's not called Flomin. Like it is.
Oh, it works?
Every 5 minutes, I may have to walk out in the middle of a 10-minute interview
understand.
To go pee because it's constant. So that's where I'm at in my life.
Well, when I think of people powering through injuries, Curt Schilling, Willis Reed.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You're not among them, Mike.
No.
I thought you were going to say you're one of us.
I didn't fake the bloody sock, though. That was only there's only one Curt.
We were initially talking about the Mariners. I'm going to take a quick break so that we'll get back to the Mariners.
Okay.
We are going to talk Mariners. Did you watch any of that series against Houston?
Quite a bit.
Perfect. Fantastic. I do want to quickly touch on the Alden Smith warrant that came out. That is from breaking news from this morning shortly before we started at our show. In our last segment, we caught you guys up to date from that. That's in St. Bernard Parish in New Orleans, Louisiana. But we already talked about how we don't think it's going to be a huge impact on the pass rush if this happens, if he's not with the team anymore. Is this something where you're like, I don't really care?
Oh, no, I care quite a bit. Yeah. And I'll reserve some level of comment until, you know, we find out more about what these allegations are and whether there's truth to them, et cetera. But you lay down with dogs, and when you get fleas, you can't be, like, completely surprised. And I said all of this long before he signed here, and I haven't had a chance to talk to any of you guys since then. But when I remember watching the game against Dallas last year, and I think it was Joe Buck, but it might have been one of the other announcers, just going gushing over the return of Alden Smith and everything he's been through. It's like, everything he's been through? What do you mean been through? I'm like, he did it. He beat people up. He got drunk over and over again and continued to get in his car. And specifically, the guy hit women. Like, what are we talking about?
And I think he also made a bomb threat at an airport one time.
But okay, he's been through so... Now look, I'm also open to the idea that people can reform and improve their lives and get help and get counseling and get better. And if that is truly what Alden Smith had done, okay, I'm happy for him. I'm still not going to gush about it over the course of a 3-hour broadcast and make him the star because he doesn't deserve that. But okay, there is something to reforming and making your life better. And we should all have a level of forgiveness. But you lose a whole lot of the benefit of the doubt when that is your past. And as soon as you see the word assault and battery, in this case it was battery, I believe.
Second-degree battery.
Okay, well, you know, that can't be a huge surprise when that is the history. So this isn't like Josh Gordon. This isn't an addiction situation where when the guy slips up, you go, gosh, that's really sad for him, and I hope he gets the help he needs. This is sad for the other person. This is sad for the victim, the person who has been battered by Alden Smith again, allegedly. Mm-hmm. So we'll wait and find out all the details, but if this turns out to be true, I would certainly hope that they have a zero tolerance policy on Alden Smith and that he's not around here. And I would love some level of an apology for even bringing him in the first place.
Well, we'll see what happened. Like, this could be, I don't want to speculate too much about it. What I will say is if it is something notable, something that costs him a job in the NFL, something that gets him suspended from the league, it happened after he signed with Seattle. It happened Saturday.
No, I got my, yeah, none of it looks good.
Yeah.
So I'll await some level of more information on this one, but it sure doesn't look good right now.
Let's brighten things up a little bit. Let's talk some Mariners here. They went 2 of 3 against the Astros, that top of the order, Mitch Haniger, Ty France, Kyle Seager. They are looking real good. We talked about it to start, Stacey and I did. You think Mitch Haniger's kind of throwing a wrench into the rebuild plans?
Well, he certainly is making a case to be around here longer term. And despite the fact that they have so many interesting prospects at the outfield position, I mean, Haniger has shown, and not just this year, he showed it in 2019 as well, he has the ability to carry a team by himself. There are very few people in the game of baseball that can carry a team, not for a whole year. I don't know that he's at that level of athlete, but can he carry the team for a week or two at a time? Yes, and he's doing it right now with some help from Ty France and Kyle Seager because they're not getting much from anybody else in that lineup. And Mitch does have that. And can he stay healthy? Well, that's a huge question, and we don't know the answer to it. He's right. It hasn't been soft tissue stuff. He's had mostly freaky injuries,
It's not like recurring hamstring. It's like
thankfully,
you got injured, and then because you were trying to recover and they didn't know that you had a sports hernia, that
he got hit in the face.
Inflamed.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Like, he got hit in the face. He broke a bone. He got hit in another place that we don't need. Like, he had things happen to him that are not, as you just said, they're not the hamstring reoccurring. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Curtis, I think there's a really good conversation to be had about Mitch Haniger. And he's only 30 years old. He still has one more year under contract after this one on arbitration. I think that there's a very real conversation to be had about whether or not he's a piece of your future. I think it's more likely than with Kyle Seager. I still think that one's challenging at age 33 with some of the history. I think it's hard to imagine keeping Seager around beyond this year or even beyond this year's trade deadline. It's not impossible. I think I'd allow for the idea that you find a way to pick up that extra year or something along those lines, but it's hard for me to imagine at 33 he's a part of it. But Haniger? He's certainly making that a very good conversation.
One of the best things about April is it's way too early to read into anything, which means you can read into everything.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So one of the things that Curtis and I were doing on Friday, and I'm springing this on you, but thankfully you know a ton about baseball, so I feel like you'll be able to handle this quickly. We were saying basically one thing we're not reading into and one thing we are. So for instance, I was reading into my own fears about Evan White, like whether or not he wouldn't improve. So I was starting to legitimately get concerned about that. And one thing I wasn't reading into would be like maybe how bad the pitching struggles for Marco had been. So how about you?
Let's see. Well, I think the Ty France one I would read into. I think there's something there. I think that kid can really, really hit, like a lot. I think he has unbelievable approach. I love his plate discipline. I love how hard he hits the ball. I love where he hits the ball. I just, everything about Ty France to me screams professional hitter. I really would like to see him at third base at some point. I'd like to see what that looks like because it makes that Kyle Seager conversation significantly different if he can play some third base because you don't have anybody else in the system who can play at an elite level. So I'm 100% all in. Reading into what we've seen so far from Ty France. I'll actually go the other way from you, Stacey. My mind immediately went to Evan White. I'm not that concerned. Brock is. He's blowing up my phone. Evan White is Mike Zanino, and their numbers are the same.
No, I don't think it's that. I think
neither do I.
Yeah.
Like, I wrote about it. I think it's a little early to start calling this the Mike Zanino trade. I mean, Mike Zanino can't hit. He can't hit.
I am not.
Apologies to Boy Howdy and his insanity.
Yeah.
That guy can't hit. I think Evan White is going to get on base more. And just watching, I don't know, I was watching him yesterday and really thinking about it. He had an at-bat that didn't lead to anything, but he has good swings. Mike Zunino used to miss the ball by like a foot and a half.
Yeah.
Evan White, I think, consistently puts good swings on balls. He's missing more than you'd like, but I think that's going to come around. I think his on-base percentage that he's shown throughout his minor league career will start to catch up. He'll take some more pitches, and I think he's going to be okay. I'll admit there's a little bit of, you know, trepidation in that because he hasn't shown it yet, but his numbers are climbing here over the course of the last week or two, and I'd like to think that that's the beginning of seeing the real Evan White.
Dodgers come to town tonight and tomorrow. Kyle Lewis potentially coming back either tonight or tomorrow. This is an amazingly good Dodgers team right now, 13-3. What did you see from them against the Padres this weekend in that hotly contested series? That was some fun baseball.
Yeah, I think with the Dodgers, what you see is that rare combination of money and metrics, right? They've managed to put it all. Andrew Friedman is as smart a guy as you're going to find in baseball, and he has all of the money in the world behind him. We've only seen that combination a couple of times, right? I think when Theo was with the Red Sox and they first put together those teams, you got to see a really bright guy in Theo with the enormous amount of money that the Red Sox... I don't put Brian Cashman quite in that category. I don't think Cashman had... And plus he had George and sort of the insanity behind... Those are the two best examples I think we've seen of money and smarts put together, and the Dodgers are showing it off right now. I mean, that rotation's insane. Mm-hmm. The lineup's crazy. They're well made. I mean, it's just a really good team from top to bottom, but it's kind of a good chance to show. I mean, the Mariners are in a no-lose situation over these three games. If you get swept, okay. I mean, like, yeah, the Dodgers are much better than you, and they're much farther along, and everything says you should get swept. If you win a couple of games, maybe you take two out of three. How high are you riding then, and what does it do for the confidence of some of the young guys on this team? I'll tell you, my favorite moment over the weekend, I don't know about you guys, was J.P. Crawford skipping home on the Mitch Haniger triple.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fist pumping, jumping up in the air.
I love Crawford. I just love watching that guy play. I wish he'd just hit for a little more pop, but the attitude and the energy that he brings to the team, and I think you see some of the same thing from Kyle Lewis when he's back in there, and I'm looking forward to watching that. I don't know. Like, you win a couple more series against good teams, and who knows what can happen after that. You just don't.
Good stuff, Mike. And all jokes aside, we are glad to have you back.
Thank you.
I'm assuming we have you all week. Are you joining us again?
I plan to join you.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes. Of course, of course. He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday, fingers crossed, at 11:30.
I think tomorrow we have Scott Service.
Look, I'm not trying
place,
to...
So.
Oh, you're
right,
blowing
you're
me
right.
off for Scott?
We hope that's
yeah,
okay.
I mean,
at 11:30?
I think so.
He's just the manager
What's
of the
What's that
Mariners.
Penciled in.
I know.
Well, because they have a day game tomorrow.
What a bunch. You know, I finally... That's it. I rearranged things.
Sorry, Scott's replaced you.
Bleeding from different places. Like,
all
come
right,
on.
Mike. All right, yeah. Like we were just talking about, you are not going to get a better example of a measuring stick for the Mariners than you will today and tomorrow against the Dodgers. We'll tell you why next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We are
What?
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend
here
in the jewelry business. The Mariners open a two-game series against the L.A. Dodgers tonight at T-Mobile Park. Pre-game shows at 6 p.m., first pitch at 7:10 p.m. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. This hour of Jake and Stacy, by the way, with Curtis, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino.
Hey,
the Mariners are going to get quite the test against the Dodgers, currently the best team in the MLB World Series, odds-on favorite. And you know what? They're playing like it, too. Like, it is way too early to pass judgment, except for when it comes to how good the Dodgers could
be.
I feel pretty confident saying they're going to be pretty stinking good. Now, the Mariners have kind of lucked out in that they're not going to be starting against Bauer, Buehler, or Kershaw. Instead, they're going to face Dustin May and Julio Urias. Justice Sheffield and Marco Gonzalez will get the start today and tomorrow, respectively. They're going to get Kyle Lewis back. But otherwise, they are facing the toughest test, not just so far, but probably that they'll face all year.
Yes.
This is when Mariners fans going to get a little bit of a reality check, in case you didn't already. And there are many listening right now that are like, Stacey, I didn't need a reality check.
Or maybe. We can throw all caution to the wind.
That's exactly
purchase
right.
Purchase playoff tickets
now.
The first 9,000.
I'm getting my
distance.
But. Yeah, World Series tat. I have an appointment for later today.
Interesting.
Yeah, Mariners World Series 2021. Too.
Where bicep,
full back,
shoulder, oh,
full
wow,
back. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
it commitment. All depends on the outcome of this series, this two-game series. I say if they take both, sweep the series, that tat is getting tatted.
Stacey, that didn't bode well for us over the weekend because I said I would eat a baked bean hot dog if
really
the Mariners
upset.
Had swept the Astros. Shout out to the Mariners for dropping Saturday night.
That's
but I don't know if... You know, a back tattoo is the best investment at this point
so?
In the season. We're not even at the 10% mark of the 2020.
I don't need
season.
Anything else. I've seen enough. Well, I have full faith in the other 94% of the season that it's going to go just the way it's
If you've
been
already
going.
Seen enough to know that the Mariners are going to sweep the Dodgers, what could Kyle Lewis then potentially add to this team that you're not already seeing?
That's exactly right. A World Series. Now, all jokes aside, let's actually dive into that conversation seriously. So tied into that, what does success look like against the Dodgers? Like, what does continued success look like? When you have a season like the Mariners have right now, there are no World Series expectations. On the part of the vast majority of fans, there's no playoff expectations. So yeah, you're going to measure success in little increments, and this is going to be one of them. What's it look like?
Absolutely. I think to me, the thing that I'm going to be most concerned with against this Dodgers team is going to be the starting pitching. Marco Gonzalez and Justice Sheffield, we have seen them make strides towards normalcy over their last couple of starts. Marco really settled down after that tough first inning against Baltimore, kept the Mariners within that ball game. It was a stark contrast from his first two starts where he was scuffling throughout. Mm-hmm. Same with Justice Sheffield. He seems to have turned a little bit of a corner here in the 2021 season. You're going up against a lineup where there are zero breaks, 1 through 9. It is going to be a tall task. And by the way, the Dodgers will get a DH too in this series. So it adds another bat to this lineup that you can't really, you know, take a breather against when the pitcher's in the lineup in a National League ballpark. You don't get Cody Bellinger to face, which is nice. That's really good. But even without him, the Dodgers still have a really good outfield in Chris Taylor, AJ Pollock, and Mookie Betts, who is, if he's not the best player in the world, he's probably the second best player in the world. I mean, you saw his game-winning catch, what was it, on mm-hmm. Sunday mm-hmm. or Saturday against the Padres. This is a Dodgers team that, you know, you don't want really any business with unless you're playing them in the World Series. So when I look at this team, I think starting pitching is going to be of the utmost importance, getting the game to the 6th or 7th inning with a shot to win it, because as we've seen from this Mariners bullpen, that can really shorten the game for you, especially yesterday, 5 innings of no-hit ball against the Astros. Scott Servais said in his post-game presser yesterday that he has not felt this confident in his bullpen since the 2018 season when he was handing the ball to Alex Colomé and Edwin Diaz to end games. I mean, that's high praise for a bullpen group that doesn't even have a set closer right now.
But you're right. I mean, Mishevitz has looked good. LJ Newsom, as a guy that's been kind of your long reliever, has been certainly like a part of kind of on the outside of that rotation, a guy that can get you a couple innings. He gets his first win in the bigs.
Will
I mean,
Vest.
you've had great pieces. You're a huge fan of Rafael. I will let you guys know I get a text every single time. Jake and I get a text from Curtis.
Yeah, the way Jake explodes at the Seahawks during their games,
uh-huh.
very similar to how I watch Mariners games,
mm-hmm.
where Stacey and Jake may get some, you know, colorful texts to the group text.
And you know what? It's all part of being a fan. We're all familiar with that. Let's get back to that Kyle Lewis conversation. Specifically, let's say he doesn't get back tonight. Let's say he makes his debut in that second game of the series tomorrow. I think what I want to see, what would count as success for this series, and I know that the bar maybe should be higher. I should say a sweep, right? But I think what I want to see is the pieces that have been good to continue to perform. Like, what I really don't want to see is the top of your lineup, Haniger, France, Seager, just completely get no contact, no hits, striking out, looking awful, and then the rest of the lineup is still struggling. Like, what I want to see is the pieces that have been doing well continue to perform. And then, you want to see little steps forward from the other parts of that lineup, but you know what I mean? Like, I want to see Marco look great.
Yes.
And I want to see a pretty solid outing from Sheffield, but we need Marco to look good.
Yes. He is the anchor of this rotation. This should be somebody that you throw out there every fifth or sixth day that gives you a chance to win. That's what he was in 2020. That's what he was for 2019. We need to see that here in 2021, because when you have that guy in your pitching staff that can just give you a shot to win every fifth day, it just makes things so much easier. It's just like a breath of fresh air. We all know what it was when Felix was doing that here in Seattle. Hopefully Marco can get back to that kind of pitcher.
All right, we got four down territory with some news on the Seahawks coming up at 12:15. Before we get to that, let's keep this conversation going. What would success look like in this two-game series against the Dodgers? Shannon Dreher joins us next.